What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Raptors TOT Cast, brought to you by tipofthetower.com. As always, I'm Chris Okranitz, and I'm joined by DeMar Grant. On this week's podcast, we're going to go through everything with the Raptors that's happened since last Wednesday. That includes the surge of locker rumors that have recently sprung up, Jerry Stackhouse being named as the Raptors 905 coach, DeLon Wright's shoulder surgery, and, man, DeMar DeRozan absolutely destroying the rim with Team USA. DeMar, how are you doing today, man?
Doing great. Enjoying the rumors, even this deep into the offseason. Pretty bizarre.
It is a bit bizarre. You know, let's jump right into that right now because I think it's a bit overblown. A lot of what people are getting this rumor out of is what Doug Smith wrote in his blog on Wednesday morning, which was, it wasn't necessarily that the Raptors are in hot pursuit of Ibaka. It was more that they would love to pursue Ibaka if he became available. All Smith said was, replying to a fan's question, "Rest assured, at this moment, and all know how things can change. I know a free agent, Serge Ibaka, is very much on their minds, and without knowing the total math or 2017 numbers, I imagine they have a scenario in their mind where it could work." So basically, all he said was that the Raptors would like to pursue Ibaka if he was to become available. I don't think that's necessarily a rumor. I think that's a known fact after that the Raptors tried to acquire him at the draft. Your initial thoughts on this, DeMar?
Yeah, it's just like it's sort of like just commentary. Why wouldn't the Raptors be pursuing Ibaka? They're not in hot pursuit. They're more like a lion stalking their prey at this point.
Yeah, like I feel like he's somebody that they've coveted. This is no secret. And Doug Smith simply just reiterated the fact that, you know, Masai Ujiri has made it known that eventually, if he could, he'd like to pursue Ibaka. That's it.
Hey, Matt, it's officially August. We need something to talk about.
Oh, trust me, I totally understand that part.
Everybody needs something to talk about at this point. This is like the serious dark times of NBA year. August, luckily we have the Team USA to talk about, but if it weren't for that and it weren't for this, I don't think we're talking about anything.
Well, since we're talking about like a clickbait rumor, let's actually hypothetically say Ibaka does become available after next season. And let's say, because obviously a lot of that will depend on how well he plays this year, let's say he plays well with Orlando. What's he worth? If you're the Raptors, what are you going to offer him?
I'm looking at, remember the cap is going up. Don't forget that.
No, totally understand that part. So if you want to like walk it, we can walk this through like totally all the way through where we could say, based on what their cap space is, they can offer him this.
I mean, they're going to have to lose Patrick Patterson, right? Unabashedly, like there's no way to retain him or gain anything for him. You just have to lose him and then trade Terrence Ross into the abyss to open the space.
That's just to like open the space like for Ibaka.
Open the space.
But I feel like they can actually, I'm sure if I dug into this enough and actually sat down and like crunched the numbers for a little while here, they could make it work where they could keep Patterson and sign Ibaka. I feel like they're going to go into the tax, obviously, but they can make it work.
Is he worth the tax?
I don't think he's worth the tax. And what kills me is that Ibaka, his whole time in Oklahoma City here recently, is he said how he's upset with his role in the offense. You know, he doesn't feel like he was a promising part of what Oklahoma City was doing. Obviously, he was overshadowed by Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, but you get the vibe of everything he's saying and how confident he is in his game. He kind of feels like he's a max player in his eyes, which all the respect and his confidence, but I don't think Ibaka is a max player at the moment. He would need to have a monster season with Orlando to even justify asking for that. Am I crazy to think that?
No, man. He's a power forward that like shoots the three and he dunks it. Great rim protector, but like for anybody to really get the max, you need to have some sort of ball handling ability. I mean, in my books, at least.
Which I agree with. And another reason why I think that he's not a max player is when you look at the free agents next year, there's going to be a lot of teams bidding for those players. Like you could potentially have Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James. Those are the guys that we all know are probably going to go back to where they are because they're just franchise guys. They hardly ever move unless your name is Dwayne Wade, of course, and you're aging.
Or Kevin Durant.
Yeah, that's the anomalies. Or LeBron James of the Heat. But I digress off of that. Other names, one name in particular is Blake Griffin. Another is Gordon Hayward. Those are two players that I feel like are more worthy of a Max than an Ibaka, and teams are going to pursue them first. And Ibaka is kind of going to be this consolation prize.
He's not that bad of a consolation prize, to be honest.
I don't think so. But is he a max player, though? Like,
the I think his self-perception is just really high, especially when leaving the Thunder. This is probably going to be like a year where he's like going to really decidedly prove himself to the world, showing how good he thinks he really is.
All the power to him for that.
Hey man, I'm excited for that. If he actually turns into this max player that, creates off the dribble and has like fadeaway jump shots and all that good stuff, what he thinks he probably is. Yeah, he's definitely worth the max at this point in his career, which looks like he's kind of on the decline, oddly.
Yeah, oddly enough, especially when you look at his metrics, man. When you look at a lot of his metrics, it's just like, this is a player that is about to hit regression, and that's not a good thing. I think if he can up his 3-ball percentage, especially considering how much he likes to relegate himself to a jump shooter, that's pivotal to what him being signed for next year is going to happen, you know? Like he needs to improve his jump shot more.
Yeah, but that, improving that jump shot just means that he's more of an afterthought in the offense,
Or maybe
Putting
it's better
like.
selection. Like a lot of times some of the shots he's taking is like, Serge, why?
Yeah, that's true. But like the jump shot, like basically him being more of a jump shooter allows him to like be further away from the basket, so he becomes, less central to the team's plan. Everybody else is doing things, and he's kind of like the escape valve for them.
His ability to be a stretch four, though, is also arguably his biggest asset.
Yeah, it is.
I just think
It's
his
just
shot
that.
selection is poor a lot of times.
Yeah, it's hard to have really good shot selection when you play for the Thunder, just because there's not enough space on the floor. You have Roberson and Steven Adams taking up space. Is like, do you really have all the daylight that Golden State has? I don't really think so.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that, especially like when they would use him in pick and pop situations. That wasn't necessarily his game either. You'd like to see it eventually become his game, but this Oklahoma City ran a totally different offense that wasn't really suitable to what Ibaka does.
Magic this year aren't necessarily going to be any better. Like
Him and Vucevic, like over
Yo.
Aaron Gordon is kind of what? Just a really good athlete at this point. He's got to
Yeah.
develop more of his game. I mean, he's not a great shooter by any means, so
And then you have I was going to say Cameron Payne. Sorry, it was Elfrid Payton is going to be the point guard. So
he's
they
not a
just have
good
no
shooter
shooting.
either.
I have no shooting on the team. They
So,
have no shooting on the team. So I'm wondering what he's going to end up doing.
Ibaka, he's going to shoot the rock more than before.
Hopefully, yeah. But I don't see him doing much action in the paint just because there's not going to be enough space. See what I'm talking about? Like, he doesn't realize that his benefit as a player is being outside of the paint other than on defense, but that's not worth max money.
Yeah, and with the Raptors, though, like, ideally, if they stay with the same offense, he fits that. Like, what he does fits what they do. And
Yeah, just chill outside, and everybody else will do stuff. You're the escape valve.
yeah, just knock down Jays, man. That's what he has to do for them. Defensively, he'd be a huge addition, too. I mean, he could relieve some pressure from JV.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he'd be another rim defender. I think his lateral motion's a bit underrated. Like, he's more athletic than people give him credit for at times.
Yeah, so you can switch on defense, which is,
Vital.
yeah, is vital in today's NBA.
Like if you can't switch on defense, you're pretty much stapled to the bench in meaningful games. You can get by in the regular season, but come playoff time and any meaningful game, if you can't switch, you're kind of useless.
Like the Louis Scola
Bench.
effect.
I mean, it's not fair because Luis was a heck of a player during his actual prime. He was a guy that could switch, he could do all this stuff. He was a really underrated player. But as he got older, he just started to get more and more brick feet, you know? He was a statue out there.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. And just, I don't know, man. Just Serge Ibaka sounds like a great idea, shiny object. But if he's good next year, he's probably going to be too expensive for the Raptors to afford, and he probably won't want to go to the Raptors. And if he's bad next year, it's like, do the Raptors really need him when they have Patrick Patterson? I don't know.
It's an interesting argument because the only way the Raptors would get him too is if they moved a player. And I feel like with what they have on their salary cap, moving Terrence Ross is the key to them making any move. And I hate to keep bringing up that dead horse of, trade Terrence Ross, trade Terrence Ross. It's the antidote to every Raptors fan's problem in terms of trying to acquire somebody. But it is. Like if they don't move him, the other option would obviously be to let Lowry walk. There's some cap space. Or to let Patterson walk, because those are two of their bigger free agents next year. I don't think the team wants to do either of that. I think they'd like to keep at least one of them.
I don't think they're letting go of Lowry.
I don't think so either.
kind of rescued Toronto from the Dark Ages.
Well, then you got to pay him, which in turn is going to affect your ability to sign other players.
Well, yeah, he is 30 now, so, and you know, who knows how many years he's going to want.
Yeah, I mean,
how much money he's going to want.
In a nutshell, Ibaka. The only way, like, I get this whole rumor is exciting for fans, and like you said earlier, in August. But let's keep in context here that it is August, and there's a long ways to go until then. And I think that's really what Doug was saying as well, is that a lot can change. Like, he said that. So let's tone it down a bit.
keep your eyes on the prize. We're talking about next offseason, this offseason.
Yeah, for a guy that might not even be that impactful.
Yeah, you know, hopefully, Terrence Ross can pick it up, so we won't even have to worry about this anymore.
I agree. Or even then they could up his value and then move him for something even better.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like I don't like Serge Ibaka. I think he's a good player. I just don't think he's a great transcending type player. Like, I think he's somebody who can help you win, but he's not worth the max. And that's, like, my biggest fear with him and everything that we saw transpire in Oklahoma City is that he believes he's a max player. He's not, in my eyes, especially with a team like the Raptors. Like,
no, especially not with the Raptors.
Well, would a core of DeRozan, Ibaka, and an aging Lowry and Valanciunas be enough to compete in the East? I think it could get to, like, the conference finals, but never the finals.
You got to figure out the monolith that is LeBron James.
Yeah, and Ibaka doesn't help you do that.
He doesn't help you do that. So, you know, I like him. You like him. It's August. It's August, you know? It's August.
Let's get into some real news then. Jerry Stackhouse just being announced as the Raptors 905 head coach. This past season, he was one of the assistant coaches on Dwayne Casey's bench for the Raptors. He was one of the main coaches for the Raptors Summer League team in Vegas a couple weeks ago. This is a pretty big move for Stackhouse, in my opinion. The 18-year vet comes with an awesome pedigree. He is pretty much the trash talk king on the sidelines, I'll give him that. And he works really well with young players, so I think this is a really, really good move for him to join the 905 and be their head coach. What do you think about it?
Yeah, he was playing pretty, like, he was coaching really well in the summer league. So it feels like that was almost like a tryout period for him. You know, it's a summer league. Summer league's for everybody. Summer league's for the referees, the players, the coaches. It all hinges on whether or not you can make it into the league or not. Looks like he's making it to the D League. No, there isn't really any spot for him in the NBA right now, plus he hasn't had that much experience. So it's a step up, huge step up for him.
Well, I think if he wanted to be a head coach in the NBA one day, I think this is the best move for him. If he wanted to just stay an assistant, he could have just stayed on, you know, Casey's staff and kept learning, right? But if he wants to take that next step forward, then I think going down the D-League and learning how to be a head coach was something he had to do.
Also, his ability to motivate players, you know, when he was in the locker room, is going to translate very well to the D-League because people want to play for somebody like that, somebody that's what everybody wants to play or wanted to play for Mark Jackson. You know, like, people love his rah-rah type of coaching, Jerry Stackhouse. People love the trash talk. They'll get the blood going, you know.
See, that also can wear thin, though, right? That can wear thin in a hurry. Like, you look at Mark Jackson and what happened with the Warriors. That didn't go so well. You want to go to another sport, you can look at Jim Harbaugh with the 49ers. That team had nothing but success for years under his tutelage, and it was just – the problem with it was that he kept banging the same message over and over and trying to relate to these players to, like, Sun Tzu quotes and, you know, football's war and you got to get out there. And then these are professional athletes. Eventually that stuff is going to wear thin with them, whereas that's more of like a college mentality. And I think Stackhouse, I'm not saying he's the same as those guys, but if you keep doing the same thing over and over with the young kids, it'll work because you're getting new players all the time. But with professionals, I don't think that'll work in the long term. I think that's some things that he's going to figure out in the D-League here, where he's going to figure out what kind of motivational tools and, you know, working with players, like what techniques and whatnot is going to work for him and translate to the next level.
At least in the D-League, you'll have like a mixture of like those young players and older players. So if you notice it not working on the older players, you'll be able to make a transition, you know, in your coaching style.
I agree. And I think one of the things that is going to help him too is a lot of the players who work with the Raptors this year, they said the thing Stackhouse taught them offensively was just invaluable. Like, they learned so much. So if that's what he's helping with professional guys, imagine what he can do with the younger guys, like, let's say, a DeLon Wright, Fred VanVleet, obviously Jakob Poeltl, who we actually saw Stackhouse put in the post and feed him in the post during Summer League. That's not very Raptors.
Yeah, I wish, this is one reason why I wish he was still an assistant for the Raptors, is like, he'd be in Dwayne Casey's ear, he's like, hey man, pass the ball to Jonas in the post.
Yeah, let him go to work.
But yeah, he should be able to help Jared Utoff and DeLon Wright in the D-League, if DeLon Wright ever recovers from the shoulder injury.
Well, yeah, he's somebody that just got off surgery. So he's out 4 months after recovering from a torn labrum now.
4 months is so much time.
It's December.
Especially in the summer, because you don't get any time to train with the team, and you don't get any like personal time to just like train by yourself. That's where most people improve.
Yeah, like he's gonna miss training camp, which is huge, because it's a lot of reps, and for him to sit there and just take mental reps, that can only go so far. Especially for a guy that needs to play more, right? Like he's a good player, he needs to get on the court, and he needs to start playing.
Yeah, he's 24, so yeah. There's only so much you can learn from the sidelines.
So I feel like this might be another developmental year for him.
Yeah, every year is supposed to be a developmental year, but this year it seems like it's almost it's not a step forward or a step back, it's just like a step sideways.
Yeah, like this was supposed to be the step forward year, though. This was supposed to be the year where he kind of comes in, doesn't necessarily take over the second point guard role. He's obviously going to be the third point guard behind Lowry and Joseph, but it was a chance for him to play some real minutes.
Yeah, hopefully he can get some in December, but by the time in December, you know, they solidify the rotation unless somebody gets injured.
Which, man, would you, like, he's definitely going to require a stint with the 905. I don't even know how ready he'd be by then.
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be like a January type of thing. So, and then he's going to be bouncing between 905 and the Raptors. So he might, now that I'm thinking about it, he might not even really touch the floor very often. And in the playoffs, you know, he's going to get carved out of the rotation just because he tightened the rotation in the postseason. So,
another year.
Are we seriously thinking about like a loss year for DeLon right here?
I think this might be, and like I hate to say that, but I'm just looking at the way everything's shaping up. I feel like this year might be another year to like what he had last year. Minimal playing time, lots of development. Most of the bulk of what he's going to do is going to come with the 905. Which I think for the Raptors is disappointing because they were hoping this guy would be able to step up and actually carve out a spot in the rotation.
Yeah, him and Corey Joseph are the same age, right? And being at 24, luckily he was an older player when he got drafted, so they still have two more years after this year,
yep.
And they're team options. So.
And DeLon Wright's a good defender, that's the thing. That's why I was hoping he would actually, you know, be healthy and get in the rotations, because he can actually defend point guards pretty well. He's got the long arms, great frame.
Yeah, Dwayne Casey would love him. I just need, you know, DeLon needs to shoot the ball better, but the defense is what, you know, allows you to stick on the floor.
Yeah, that's Coach Casey through and through. Another thing with the Raptors 905 is they made the signing of Jared Utoff official. We talked about him on the last podcast. He is a 3-and-D player, but neither of us really see the D in him. We just see threes and probably a couple of years of the 905. Fair?
This is very fair. You know, hopefully he can get some defensive training. You know, one of my gripes with the 905 is it doesn't seem like it develops defense. You know, everybody in the D-League is trying to, like, prove themselves to, like, their scouts or their coach or whatever so that they seem like they can play in the NBA. Kind of hard to do that with defense.
Yeah, I feel like the D-League is a different game altogether. Teams try to instill their systems in it. Like, obviously, the Raptors, their offense that they play with the Raptors is also with the 905. It's not the same, but I feel like you're just really trying to get guys acclimated with the system and just create organizational continuity. And the way the D-League plays sometimes is you kind of see it just turn into this free-reign run-and-gun game.
Like, right, so I don't know, like, how... I hate to come down on the D-League, but, like, how's that supposed to be conducive to my development for players?
Guys are playing. I mean, what they're going to tell you, I mean, what anybody would tell you, in my opinion, is that it's up to the organization to instill that, right? Like, it's their job to develop the players, not the D-League.
Okay, I can believe it. I just want to see it happening. This is going to, like, start to become a problem with the Raptors where, you know, they keep getting these, like, draft picks, and they're players that are, you know, pretty good players, but you never get to play them. because, you know, we're contending for a playoff spot, and it feels like the team is trying to go all in. So you, by having, like, you know, Jakob Poeltl, who you should probably play, but, like, DeLon Wright, you know, Bruno, Aguera, and now Yutov, like, these are guys that seem like if they were on the 76ers, they would be playing, or even if they were on the Lakers, they would be playing, but since they're on the Raptors, and the Raptors are, like, actually playing very well, they're not really getting enough time to actually develop on the floor. Because this is the best place to develop as a player is, like, in the NBA.
Here's the thing. I do, but here's the thing with the Lakers and the Sixers. They're albatrosses. They're terrible. Like, I feel like I could pick some random guys and they could get burned. They get playing time.
Yeah, but if, okay, like, if you're on the, you know, on the Jazz, you know, you don't think DeLon Wright's going to get time to play on the Jazz?
Oh, for sure he would. I think 100% he would, because their point guard situation is also a mess. But I just, I get what you're saying with the Raptors, and I feel like that's where Stackhouse going to the D-League is even more important. Is that he's going to help these guys develop into NBA players. That's at least the hope, right? But I just feel like with the Raptors, too, if they're going to keep this rotation 8-9 guys, roughly, there isn't really room for a lot of rookies. They got to be exceptionally good.
Okay, then they got to develop replacements because Lowry and Carroll are starting to get old. You know,
which
they're in their 30. They're going to be north of 30 starting, like, basically end of next year. So,
which are they not trying to do through the D League right now with DeLon Wright, possibly Van Fleet, and then if you want to go on the wing there, I hate to go there, but Bruno Caboclo.
Yo, Bruno.
Yeah, I know. I think you knew I was going down that road, but obviously young Bruno is an option, and then Jarrod Yutov. Like, there's players. Yeah. There's players.
They still got to play on the floor, man.
I agree, and there's only one way you can find out. You got to play him.
Yeah, so hopefully they get some playing time. Fortunately, DeLon Wright does not look like he'll be getting playing time.
At least not till the new year.
Oh, man. I like him, dude. That's, like, the word. That's why.
Same. I really like him. I have high expectations for him.
That's why I hate that he's out for so long. But, you know, you can only do so much with one shoulder.
One last little note on the coaching situation, though, especially with Stackhouse going to 905. That's an opening on the Raptors bench now. I think they're going to try and sign somebody. I don't know who, but I feel like Dwayne Casey's going to add somebody in the coming weeks. I know. I don't know who yet. I'd have to go back and look at the coaching tree and try and find somebody who's available. A lot of times what coaches will do is go back through their coaching trees of whoever they've coached with over the years and get somebody based off things like familiarity, similar philosophies, just things that are easy that can create a congruent match, you know? Like, that's something I could see Dwayne Casey doing. A lot of these guys come from his past.
What I would love to see him do is something like Steve Kerr, where he's just like, I just need a young mind that I can just have here on the bench and bring me out-of-the-box ideas. I don't know if Dwayne Casey, you know, Dwayne Casey seems like an old-school dude, so it doesn't look like he's going to do that, but I think that would be the best idea, especially for this Raptors team. It has, like, a mix of young and old talent, and then, like, a mix of styles.
See, it's funny, because a lot of people thought that their player development coach, Jaume Malele, he was going to be the guy that would step up and kind of get this role with the Raptors. But according to Raptors Republic's Blake Murphy, he's not that interested in the idea of going to coach the Raptors, and the Raptors are more interested in keeping him in a player development role. Found that kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's a shame, dude. You know, some people, like, tend to, like, their roles really well. You know, he probably has, like, some sort of routine, doesn't really want to change it up. I can understand it, but help the team.
You know what, though? Maybe he is best suited helping the team in a way of developing players. Maybe he's not, like, the greatest in terms of, you know, game management and other situations that are you're asked to do more of as an NBA assistant coach. I think he might just enjoy helping young guys develop. And, man, all the power to you for that. That's a very, very important piece of an NBA organization.
All right, so Raptors have an open spot. It's going to be interesting to see who they grab. They haven't really made any sort of indication.
Yeah, I think we'll start to hear some stuff in the next, I want to say, week or so. We'll start to hear some rumors trickle out there. I'm curious as to who it'll be, but I feel like we're definitely going to hear something about it. I would say by, you know, the third week of August, they'll have somebody in that position.
Like the middle of the Olympics, we're going to get this weird.
Yeah, or like even like post-Olympics.
Okay.
We'll get something out of there. Speaking of the Olympics, DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, obviously played for Team USA. I don't even feel like you have to be living under a rock to not have seen what DeMar DeRozan's been doing. Even if you don't like basketball.
No, if you've been living under a rock, the rock should have exploded after the dunks that he's been throwing down.
For sure. And even if you like mindlessly scour the internet for like ideas, or you're on Twitter or Instagram, you've definitely seen the videos by accident. This dude has been just destroying the rim.
Yeah, dude, it's gorgeous. Especially the 360. Even though he missed it, it seems like it's been generating as much buzz as like if he actually hit it.
Yeah, I think the what if buzz has been greater than the he did it buzz, which is crazy.
I love it because it looks like he's putting on a show, trying to put his stamp on the USA team.
What's funny for me too is that, at least something I noticed, is a lot of his dunks are coming near the end of the game, and these games are blowouts. They're well out of hand. And a lot of times players will just dribble the clock out. DeMar is just hammering these things down as the clock's expiring. Like it's fun to watch.
Coach K even told them to like tone down the showboating, and it's that I feel like those dunks are gonna be part of the showboating that he's talking about toning down because
Showboating.
you're doing, yeah, man, 360 dunks over your Chinese contemporaries doesn't really do well for relations.
Oh God,
You know what I'm
that
talking
it's not man. That's not really showboating. You don't see him like going around. He's just
about?
dunking on dudes. Like,
They were up by like 50 points, and he's just like, you know what would be amazing if I just 360 slammed it on this
well,
dude.
he said he had no idea what he was thinking. I don't know
Oh,
if you saw
okay.
that. He talked about today on Wednesday at US camp, and he said, "I don't know what the heck I was thinking. I just did it." So I found that pretty interesting, that he's
Yeah.
playing and he's not thinking.
That's actually the best way to play. It's like the game being an extension of self. Easiest to play that way.
And if it results in 360s on top of guys' heads, then I'm all for it.
Me too. I can't wait until the Olympics to actually see what he pulls out of the bag.
I'm curious. Well, they play China in their first game, so.
It's gonna be like a battle for the first 5 minutes, and then the U.S. is probably gonna crush them.
I'll take the under on the 5 minutes, by the way.
Under on the 5 minutes, really?
That team's brutal.
Oh
No
man.
disrespect to them, but the U.S. is in a different class. There is no way the U.S. should lose this tournament.
Hey man, they say that every year, and then there was a couple years, man. There were a couple Olympics.
That was like 8 years ago. Well, that was longer than that now. What, 8 years ago?
Yeah, and
12
they're
years
still.
ago? I'm trying to think. They're so much more improved now. And Spain, Argentina, teams like that have gotten worse, in my opinion.
Yeah, they've aged, so it's pretty much the U.S. versus the field. I think you could pretty easily take the U.S. against the field, which is amazing.
I'd take that bet. You probably get good odds, too.
Yeah, because you thought you could do that with the Warriors this year, and you would have lost. I'm just saying,
That's true.
anything is possible. So when you see this Team USA, DeMar DeRozan throwing it down, just remember, he can lose at any time, which would be amazing to watch. It'd kind of be amazing to watch him lose, just because Team USA is so used to winning. Be like, the whole narrative surrounding them would be a pretty spectacle to watch. I wanted to see it for the drama, basically.
I just don't see it happening, to be honest. I don't see them losing.
Okay. Remember the Warriors. And it just happened. It's not even like I'm talking about like the 2007 Patriots. The Warriors thing just happened. Amazing team. I mean, this USC team is not even the best team that they would be able to field.
It's not the best team, but it's still significantly better than anybody else in this tournament. Like the Warriors, they were better than everybody in the NBA. But you can make a case for some teams to give them a competitive game. You would be really hard pressed to make a case, a strong case, of how a team could give the US a run for their money.
I'm trying to be out here for the people that want to take the field, They need an advocate somewhere. Devil's advocate, maybe.
Well, I'll take their money.
But yeah, DeMar DeRozan, man. There was an alley-oop that Kyle Lowry had tapped back. They were running out of bounds. I feel like he was gonna go like between the legs with it, where Jimmy Butler had stolen the dunk. Tell me you saw that.
I did. I did. I've actually like had no interest in watching the US games prior to the first game. And then when I realized all this like the dunks and all that, I'm like, "You know what?
Gotta watch him
I'll
now.
watch them."
That's like the main. See, that's the thing for DeMar right now. It's like he's the main draw for the USA team.
Yeah, and actually for me, it's mostly watching what DeMar is going to do next. I've tuned into the games for that reason.
It's like we're Raptors fans, but you know the entire country is talking about him, and there's nobody really doing anything else interesting on that team.
No,
like you get to watch Kevin Durant, you know, pal around with Klay Thompson and Draymond Green.
Yeah, that's cute. Oh. They're getting all cuddly and stuff.
Even the Snapchats are from DeMar DeRozan's account.
Man, the whole like watching those guys yuck it up, I can see why people are gonna hate the Warriors this year.
They're good. Oh man, they're gonna despise the Warriors, but the Warriors are gonna have the best like cool kids club of all time.
Cool kids club. Yeah. Oh god, I can see where this is gonna go with that. The animosity is gonna be something fierce.
You know, for the Heat, when LeBron had joined that team, they were wearing red and black. So it's easy to hate on a team that's wearing red and black because people typically associate that with the enemy, yep. The danger. Warriors wearing blue and gold, man. Are you going to hate on the blue and gold?
It's not going to matter. Oh, the hate is going to be real. It's going to be off the charts. Anything else to like close off with the Olympics there or no?
Can I say one more time? I can't wait until the regular season. Can't wait until it starts.
Okay, if you're gonna say that, then you know what? I'm giving a shout out to my boy JaVale McGee for getting the contract to join Golden State at camp.
JaVale, oh my goodness.
What if he turns into a man?
What if he turns into an actual good player?
It's possible. If he stops Shaqtin' a Fool, I mean, this is a 2-time Shaqtin' a Fool champion. Like if JaVale can get it together, you know?
That actually would turn into like a behemoth, like an actually unstoppable team.
Yeah, he dominated a Drew League game last week. I know I'm reaching a lot now, but I just want to see JaVale McGee get out there and ball out with his team. I want to see Durant. I want to see Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and JaVale McGee. Just say that aloud. I just want to see that, dude. This has to be a starting five. I just want to see them on the court together. That's it. And I just want to see these guys laugh when they throw, like, no-look passes to JaVale McGee, and it goes, like, right through his hands into the first row. And he's just like, man.
2-time Shaqtin' the Fool champion. You.
And he's stupid athletic. Like, JaVale McGee is one of the best athletic big men we've seen in a while.
Yeah, so if he can just, like, you know, the Warriors are typically a smart team, right? If he can just, like, glean some information off of these guys, that's what I'm saying, that it could be, like, an unstoppable team.
Yeah.
You know, because his basketball IQ is, let's be honest, the basketball IQ isn't very high.
It's primitive.
Right? But if all you have to do is, like, catch alley-oops, dunk the ball, and block shots, you don't really need to be a high intellect for stuff like that. You know what I'm talking about?
I totally understand, especially on a team like the Warriors.
Yeah.
They literally can tell them to screen and go to the net.
Doesn't have to do anything.
Screen and dive all day. Just screen and dive. I think he can get that.
Yeah.
Rebound, you know? Hit the outlet, man.
And Durant, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green are going to have a lot of practice on Team USA, throwing those lobs to DeAndre.
That is actually true. That is true. I think with us talking about JaVale McGee, it's time to wrap it up. I'm probably one of the few people out there who really enjoys watching JaVale McGee play because I think it's hilarious and it's also awesome at times when he puts it all together. But I know I'm a very, very small percentage. I'm a very, very, very small percentage. Some people are probably like, how the hell is this guy like JaVale McGee?
Yeah. Oh, man. People know who he is, though. He's infamous, not famous. Infamous.
Yeah, he's a 2-time Shaqtin' a Fool champion. You gotta know who this guy is, man. I think Shaq did as much as a stock for him as he did making those stupid plays.
Oh, man. Oh, it's going to be a great season for him. And DeMar DeRozan, man. If he could just replicate what he's doing right now.
Ooh, I've been drinking the DeMar DeRozan Kool-Aid a little bit this offseason. I'll be the first to admit that. I think he's going to have a really, really good season coming up. I won't spoil it now, but when we get closer to the season, expect me to, try and sell you a little bit on him.
All right, you be on that side of the fence, and I'm going to be on this side of the fence. You could buy, actually, you know what? You can buy all your houses and stock. DeMar DeRozan Island. I'm just going to stay over here on the shore.
We're not an island. We're actually like a metropolis, just so you know.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We're the third richest contract in NBA history, so we can buy a lot of things now. Just an FYI.
Oh, okay, man.
On that note, I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this week's podcast. As always, I'm Chris Okranitz. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris Okranitz. You can follow DeMar Grant on Twitter at DeMar J. Grant. If you like what you're hearing and you want to follow the show and you want to follow the website, you can follow us on Twitter at Tip of the Tower. You can also like our Facebook page at Tip of the Tower. Please subscribe to the show as well. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and SoundCloud, also at Tip of the Tower. Anything social media, anything website, anything you want to find us, Tip of the Tower is what you got to type in to find it, and it will pop up right away. Thank you for listening, guys. We'll see you next week. Enjoy the Olympics. Take care.
Junior Dave.